Hey, how's it going? If you listened to last week's episode and you listened to it all the way through, because I know every single one of you did, you probably heard Daniel from Petal Pickers in South Carolina jump on a new topic. So that's what we're talking about today. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, I'm still here.
You're still here. We're still in your office.
I just decided we needed to keep talking. We got to get this on record and get everyone straightened out.
Oh no. That one podcast is not gonna do that. So I'm so sorry to apologize for you. So
That's true.
yeah. It's gonna take a lot more than just us to straighten everybody out.
Well, we were having fun, so we're just going to continue the conversation.
Perfect. And this round, go around, we're gonna talk about customer base and how everyone's customer base is different, and how when you're a multifaceted business and you're selling to lots of different avenues and types of people, sometimes we need to be able to facilitate, forecast, allocate, to meet those needs and those demands and those expectations. So before we dive into that, thank you for being here. Thanks for listening. This is the Between Me and Drew podcast with Clara Joyce Flowers. Clara Joyce Flowers is my cut flower farm located in northwestern Illinois. And believe it or not, if you've paid attention from last week, I'm not in Illinois anymore. I'm in South Carolina. And I'm on a little bit of a road trip visiting some friends that I've made throughout the years. And Daniel is one of those. So, you ready to get started?
Thanks for visiting, Drew. I am ready to get started.
Sounds great. So, this was a topic that you brought up, and I think it is a really good topic that takes some time to kind of facilitate, move through, and learn how to move through. It takes time in regards to scaling up to be able to do or be making sales through multiple facets. Takes a lot of relationship building as well. Because when you are selling to a wedding florist, they have different expectations as far as available product than a farmer's market customer would. So we have this kind of broken out in a couple different avenues of sale. So we're going to talk about market forecasting from farmer's market. Talking about retail, so that would be selling arrangements direct to someone, selling to florists, and then also selling through wholesalers. So those would be people who are then reselling your product to a florist, who is then reselling them to a customer. So, kind of working our way back one step at a time into the belly of the industry, basically. So, let's start right from the beginning with farmers market. Did you ever sell a farmers market?
Never sold at one. I go to them and like to purchase flowers and baked goods and
And
veggies from our local one, but I have never sold my flowers at a farmers market. Now, last year when you were visiting, I had it on my mind that I really was thinking about it
Yes, you did.
seriously.
Yes, you did. I remember quite well.
And we just decided not to. We decided it was best to keep our focus other places and not bring that on yet. So,
Which I think is a mature decision to do.
yes, I think I. So we're fortunate here in Greenville, South Carolina. We have an amazing farmers market downtown. On Main Street, the city closes it off. Our Main Street's built up and it's really beautiful with a lot of businesses that are thriving down there. And so it really does attract a large crowd every Saturday. And I think currently we have four flower vendors down there, with tons of other vendors as well, but they sell out every week. They sell out in May, they sell out in July, and they sell out in November. So I really wanted to be a part of that. And as we discussed in the last podcast episode, with shipping being a main focus of our business, one of the things that it did create was kind of not a loss of connection, because I connect with all of our followers and friends that we have across the country. But the local community aspect of it, it's just a different thing. And when you're meeting someone face-to-face every weekend and they're buying your products from you, it's a different feeling and a different relationship. And I kind of miss that. So I really considered it as another way to sell our flowers. But
I do all very, very valid points, for sure, 100%. Having been someone who was able to build their farm brand and name at a farmer's market, there are a lot of pros, many of which you just said, but there's also a lot of cons to farmers markets. And
like sleeping in on Saturdays.
Don't kid yourself, because you and I are very well aware that during the week and when we're all in production mode, there is very little downtime. And if you're someone who's crazy and chaotic like I am and do weddings on the weekends too, that adds a whole nother level of things. But if you're not doing weddings and you are doing farm production, and you're, you know, running a wholesale operation where you're selling to florists, blah, 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 you do have access to your weekends. You have the ability to sleep in. You have the ability to go on a day trip with your partner. You can do those things because you're not getting up at the ass crack of dawn to load up your van with product that you've harvested 2 days before and arranged the day before and put in your cooler, and you're going to load up your van and you're going to drive to wherever the market is and you're going to set it up and you're going to work hard for 4 hours, 5 hours, making those sales, talking to those people. And that is like 4 or 5 hours where you are like on, and you are on hard. Like, you don't have downtime at a good busy farmer's market. And they're draining, very emotionally and physically draining. And then you pack up all your shit that you didn't sell, and then you take it back home and you unload it, and then you collapse.
It's kind of, if you think about it, a little like shipping your flowers. Farmers market are a risk, because if the weather's not nice, you can sell very little.
Yep.
And you're not in control of that either.
For sure. Absolutely. You could sell very little if the weather's not good. You could, I mean, this happened to us too. Our main market was in a college town. There was 4 colleges in the town that we sold in. And if there was a football game or something happening with the colleges, there was not a lot of people showing up. So there's so many things that you need to, you know, take into consideration. Now, having said all that negative stuff, there are people who sell at farmers markets and have sold at markets forever and ever and love it. It's become part of their identity. It's part of who they are. I'm thinking of Shanti from Whipstone. They do an amazing year-round farmers market and rock it out all the time. And it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. But when you're kind of thinking about where you want your business to go in the different avenues and channels of sale, you really have to think about, you know, what is it going to take as far as effort and energy to facilitate and achieve that, outside of just that moment of making the sale at the farmer's market. So the nice thing with markets, though, is that your customers are just going to be happy with what you've got. Very little expectation about, I have to have red dahlias at the farmer's market this week, or I have to have, you know.
Not the specifics.
True.
That's nice.
And where, when you're, you know, starting your farm or starting your flower business, there's a lot of value to that, because markets are, and market clientele are great people to kind of be your guinea pig as you learn and you learn to grow. And there'll be people there to buy that product for sure.
Now, how does it affect, though, like the colors you grow, the different varieties? Because I know with us at our retail store, people typically like brighter colors. But then when we're selling to our wholesale customers, a lot of them are using the product in weddings and they're liking the paler colors. Can you sell white at a farmer's market?
You absolutely can. You just need to be smart about how you do it. When it comes to incorporating flowers, more so colors, into mixed bouquets that you typically wouldn't see in that venue or in that area of sale, instead of thinking of them as kind of the only color that you can have in the story, think of them as an accent. So I'm thinking of dahlias right now. We would always have a shit ton of purple dahlias, and we would have a shit ton of white dahlias left over from the florists that didn't need them that week. So we would take purple dahlias, pink sedum, and red amaranth, and that would be the bulk of the bouquet. And then we would like add three white dahlias just to like lighten it up. And if we were feeling really festive for the week, we would call it the purple fizz, or like the grape soda bouquet, because mm-hmm. that touch of white, that little sparkle, would be like the bubble of like the grape soda. So it does take some doing to kind of work in those colors that aren't super, you know, vibrant or happy or warm or, you know, whatever that emotion is that that color evokes. But it can be done for sure. If I were just growing for farmers market or direct to consumer sales, not through wedding or event work, I would definitely grow a lot more of like the warmer, rosy, pinky, coral, gold tones. All of those more well-rounded color palettes have a lot of value in a market situation. Highlighter colored dahlias, like the vibrant yellows.
We don't grow those.
We don't grow those for a reason. For a reason.
Because nobody wants them. Exactly.
They're so harsh on the eye. And I'm sure that there was a point in time when they were the fabulous thing at farmers market, but that's just not where the color trends are right now. So you do have to really kind of factor that in some capacity for sure.
So for us, I kind of consider our retail store is our farmers market.
Yeah.
And I get to choose it. The end of the week, what's going there? The retail store's busiest Friday, Saturdays, and we're open on Sundays too, but that's not the busiest day. Fridays are our biggest flower selling day at our retail store. And so we've shipped all of our product out on Wednesday, and then everything that we're cutting on Wednesday and Thursday, it fresh, is what goes to our retail store.
Okay.
And that's our outlet. It's a lot to plan, like in your field. And because we're selling a little bit to our event florist and to our own retail store and sometimes wholesalers in the area, it's like everyone kind of wants different things, but you can't grow everything.
Right.
So in my mind, it's always a process that we do every week is to kind of identify maybe some things I don't put on our wholesale availability list because I know I'm going to save that to mix in with our retail bouquets.
For sure. And you have the ability to do that because that product is not previously spoken for. It's not. And when we get to the end of this like breakout, I want to talk about kind of how I allocate product in situations like this as far as like who gets first choice.
Yeah.
So we'll get into more of that.
Who's the special?
Exactly. Yeah. okay. So market we covered. Let's talk about retail. Like if I were making $250 anniversary bouquets or $100 birthday bouquets, you know, things like that. When we would be taking those types of, you know, designed requests, I generally will ask for like a color palette or like a color direction, and then that's it. It stops there. So, you know, in that situation, someone's either really going to know what they want or they're going to know what they don't want, or they're just going to say it's up to you. And when they say it's up to you and it's designer's choice, that's honestly best case scenario because we have full freedom to use whatever is freshest, whatever is in the best condition. And, you know, we still even have leeway when it comes to like requested color direction. Like if somebody asks for like bright happy, it's like, okay, well, my bright happy might be different than your bright happy, but you still told me bright happy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm going to pull in like vibrant golds and really rich oranges and, you know, top it off with a little bit of fuchsia and kind of warm out that palette a little bit rather than having it be like bubblegum pink.
So you're talking about when you're getting specific requests through your retail outlets. So some people that are listening to this podcast may only be selling the flowers that they grow. For us, I think in your day-to-day operations and for your wedding stuff, you may be ordering some wholesale in to supplement
right.
to create the final vision that your customer is asking for. And for us at our retail store, we do the same thing.
Yep.
So we also bring an imported product to mix with the flowers.
Yep.
From our farm, because at the end of the day, our retail store is open 7 days a week and we need to always have product there. So
yep.
I get to choose what goes there and what goes other places.
Absolutely. For sure. For sure. For sure. Now, next kind of like step up from that, which you and I both have a lot of experience with, is selling wholesale to florists.
Yeah, I love my florist customers.
As do I.
I have focused on weddings, wedding event florists.
Yes.
To yes. be specific.
Yes.
So we have a lot of brick and mortar florists around here. They haven't shown a ton of interest. And then sometimes when they are interested, they don't really, it's hard for them to jump on our program. So for us, I feel like I've gone out of my way and spent a lot of time with our marketing to develop an easily accessible, functioning website that is point, click, process.
Yep.
And it's super easy. I think a lot of our brick and mortar florists don't feel as comfortable around that technology, or they just don't want to learn a new website. I don't, you know, so many different reasons. And they want me to send them pictures, or can you text me a picture? And we stop texting pictures. I don't do that to anyone now.
Nope.
If we're getting down to that level, then we either need to work on our trust in our relationship.
Yep.
And get on the same page or whatever, but I don't have the time to do that. I did my first couple years, and that's why I developed the website with pictures, and it's there. That's what it looks like.
Yep, absolutely.
A lot of our product selection is like the colors that we choose to grow and all that are pastels.
Yeah.
And whites. I never grow enough white. But a lot of pastels, and peach is a color that has become super popular, as some of the other brighter colors are becoming, even in wedding work.
Right.
And just as the trends change. And we've really focused on that because that's great for retail and for wedding work.
True.
So,
true.
You know, we don't grow a lot of red on our farm. Actually, I really never grow red. Mm-hmm. So I don't grow red anemones. Mm-hmm. I don't grow red tulips. I don't grow red dahlias.
Really?
Cornell is an excellent red dahlia to grow. It's very productive. The tubers hold over winter well. And I don't grow it. My customers don't ask for red.
There you go.
So maybe if we grew dahlias for Christmas.
Oh, God. Could you imagine?
Just keep it going.
Harvesting the same thing for like 8 months out of the year.
But I know people do. So
for sure.
It's just, you know, I don't have that.
Right.
I don't have anyone asking me for red.
Yeah. And I think you had a really good point when you said the clients that you work with have to trust you and you have to trust them.
Yeah.
It's a very mutually inclusive relationship there. There are times when that doesn't work. And if that doesn't work and you have to part ways, that is totally fine.
I have parted ways with a decent customer of ours. And it was the relationship, and it just wasn't there, and I didn't feel respected.
Yep.
And so we went different ways.
And that's fine.
And she's thriving, and I'm thriving.
If they want to use dahlias for retail work, I want them to be harvested when they're a little not so blown open. Mm-hmm. Because they need to, that dahlia product, that stem, needs to be able to be held in a cooler for a few days. It needs to be able to hold up in a vase. And that flower will slowly open a little. Not like a lily where it's big and dramatic, but that petal formation is there if you allow the time and space for it. Whereas with wedding product, I want that to be in full show for my client when it's delivered so that it's perfect for their customer too.
And that's such a hard call to relay to your employees.
Yes.
And even for yourself. And just when you have, I mean, think how fast we have to get everything done. Mm-hmm. And there is no time to really pick and choose out in the field.
Right.
So when it's our job to go cut all the whatever, peonies, anything, poppies, dahlias,
you name
when
it.
It's time to cut it, you are clear cutting it all.
For sure.
And that's something that took me a couple years to learn, is that when the florist, the event florist kept asking me, we want it fully open.
Yeah.
And I was giving them something that was not.
Right.
Because I was just giving the same product out across the board to all my different avenues. They really do want different products.
Yeah. There's a different expectation.
I think part of the benefit to working with event florists is that you can allow some older product to go through that avenue. And it's not just the amount of time before the flower looks bad. It's also how blown open the flower is. That's what the wedding customers want.
Yeah. The newer, more trendy wedding customers.
Yes.
When I was first starting to scale up, I was actually selling my wholesale product through another farm who was then reselling it to another florist. And the florist that was ultimately getting that product was a very old school, old fashioned pain in the ass. And in
roundy moundy.
A
Did
disaster.
They want everything tight
and tight, like... tight, tight. If there was anything wrong, they were gonna tell you about it. And the world has a very interesting way of working, because that florist that was ultimately getting that product in the early days did end up to be my client of my a client of my own when the other farm closed, and I had to part ways with the florist because that's just not how we operate. You know, I'm coming to this from a wedding florist perspective. I have a pretty good idea of what things should look like and what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And if it doesn't, if you're not on that same page and that trust isn't there, like you said from the get-go, it's just not going to be a strong relationship. So we parted ways.
See ya.
Ciao, baby. okay. Last point we're going to talk about as far as avenues of sale is going to be direct to wholesalers.
The wholesalers.
So these are the companies who are then reselling your product to the florist.
Our wholesalers locally for me did not want to work with me at first, and now they have all been reaching out as local flowers have become more popular and as they've dealt with issues receiving their products, from the cargo planes not shipping to protests in foreign countries.
Yes.
So we've seen each year for the last 3 years, major interruptions in the wholesaler chain of product. And that has led them to start knocking on our door. For our farm, we have already allocated and built up a customer base where we sell all of our product, and there's not really much left for the wholesaler. There is one that I have a good relationship with, and that is the key.
Yep.
And they will text me or call me, and it's pretty easy going. Cut and dry. Yes, we have this. No, we don't. Thank you so much.
Yep.
It's a good relationship. And so I will sell to them. They understand that they can't come to me with a huge order because I don't have it for them.
At the last minute.
At the last minute. Yeah. I mean, I don't do anything crazy for them. This is what we have for you this week. It's kind of what hasn't already been sold.
Yep.
And if you need it,
if you'd like it,
I would love to sell it to you.
Absolutely.
And thank you so much. And you're getting a discounted price. Is that going to work for most people probably, you know, you don't want to approach it that way. That's just the relationship that we have developed, and it works for us. I have another wholesaler that has tried to jump in, and I just don't have any product left. And you, they didn't want to work with me in the beginning, and so
you missed the boat, girl.
Missed it. Maybe we'll come back around and pick you up, but
yeah,
and that's okay.
It's okay, but it also that takes, you know, tremendous time, and goes back to a point that we talked about in the previous episode, where in order to facilitate, you know, clients and orders and requests like that, you have to be able to scale up your operation.
Yes.
And if that wholesaler order is where you want to go, you need to be damn sure that they're on the same page. Because if you're investing $100,000 to be able to supply them with product, they better be coming hand over fist to get that from you.
Yes. So I asked one time, I asked for a minimal contract.
Yep.
I said, look, you've been asking to order dahlias for me for 3 years now. I'm not going to have them for you unless you can guarantee me this in a year in advance. And yep. That's the problem that most of our relationships with our wholesalers is because they're not committing in advance. And so I don't have the time to grow them.
Right.
They aren't calling me until it's like the flower's in season.
Yep.
They saw it on my social media or whatever.
Yep.
But to grow on a large scale for a wholesaler, you really have to plan that a year in advance.
Yeah, for sure.
At least.
Or have that relationship that you've built over the years and et cetera, et cetera. So our wholesaler, since our farm is more wholesale oriented, and we don't do a lot of, you know, retail bouquets and things like that, it is easier for us to take on, you know, a wholesaler here and there. We definitely see them come into play and come into the picture for dahlia season. It's just that their clientele that would be asking for dahlias are wedding florists. So, you know, we can get by with that really big, beautiful, blown open product. And that is going to be far superior to what they're going to get out of California, or flown in from South America, or, you know, flown in from Holland. It's just that local timeline, you just can't beat. So there definitely is that. And since we are focusing on, you know, a few really key or strong varieties of dahlia, and we're growing them by the thousand count, we do have the volume and we do have the product. I want to start to talk about emphasis and allocation. Do you have anything else to contribute for wholesaler?
Yes. So there's a wholesaler in a different city.
Okay.
So I drive 3 hours away to another city, and I can say it, Charleston, South Carolina. It's a huge wedding market. Tons of event florists. I could never supply them. I give my event florist list out to other farms for Charleston, because I'm like, look, it is unlimited.
Yeah.
They need help.
They need product.
They need product. And anyways, there was a wholesaler that I worked with selling dahlias to them, and it was a decent relationship. But what I ran into was that our event florist, who I had built a big customer base of, were telling me, we don't want you to sell to the wholesaler because they're going to take all your product. We're not going to have access to the volume anymore. And they're going to mark it up, and it's going to be more expensive for us to buy. So that was something that I really had to consider.
Mm-hmm.
Mayesh, really throwing some names out there.
Daniel.
They just opened a wholesaler
location
in Charleston, South Carolina, and it's 3 hours away from our farm. It, for me, would be so much easier to get up, drive the van down, drop off one load, and turn around and drive back.
Or, better yet, hire a driver to do that for you so you can worry about something else.
Exactly. So true. But do I love going to Charleston and seeing the ocean? Yes.
Oh, my God.
It's so fun. I'm going to be honest. So my customers in Charleston, the actual florists, are the happiest to see me of all my customers, because they're coastal. It's hard for people to grow crops down there due to hurricanes and other weather events and the warmer night temps.
Yep.
So I'm kind of in a different climate for sure up in the this part of the state than the coast. And they just don't have as much product down there. So I love going down there and selling to them. But that's something I had to consider when I'm selling is, okay, I sell to event florists. I do also sell to wholesalers. But I had to make the decision to not sell to the wholesaler down there. For right now.
For right now.
You never know. Things change.
Expansion is always an option.
More and more.
More everything. Okay. Let's talk about allocating. This is interesting, and this is something that I have to do a lot, actually. At certain points of the season, we don't have enough of any one certain thing for everybody to have it. So that's – it kind of plays the exact opposite of the way that I had this – what we just talked about laid out. So the emphasis for me when I'm allocating product is going to start at my largest client, and that's usually – my wholesaler. Mm-hmm. So even though they're paying me the least amount for the product, they're also buying a pretty good amount. And I really need that relationship. So they're going to get first choice. Then it's going to go to the florists who are buying direct from me. Now, having said that, I have some florists who are going to get first choice over anybody, doesn't matter who you are, just because they've been with me since the very beginning. They bought the very first shitty snapdragons I ever produced, and they spend thousands of dollars every week.
They're your favorite.
They're my favorite. So you're going to have a few relationships like that.
For sure.
Here and there. But as you kind of work back towards where we started, you know, then it's going to be your retail clients, and then it's going to be your farmer's market. So basically, if you were a farm who is, you know, selling to many or a few of these avenues that we talked about, your farmer's market customer is gonna get whatever is still standing in the field, basically, which is also, if you look at it from a day of the week timeline perspective too, that market is the last customer that you're gonna sell to that week. So whatever, like I just said, hasn't sold is what they're gonna get. And then the whole process starts back again on Monday with your wholesaler, and then Tuesday with your florist, and then, you know, from there.
I think a lot of times when farmers talk about this, it can come across as these different avenues are getting a superior product first and then an inferior product at the end of the chain. And I just want to discuss that that's not true.
Right.
We do not let inferior products leave our farm
right
under our control.
Right.
So it's just,
it's the timeline.
It's allocating
yeah
your product differently for different segments of your market.
For sure.
So for us, we're more retail focused.
Yep.
So the first of my product is going to go to people who have prepaid for a subscription.
True.
And that's about 75% of our business are our retail customers. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to take a large section or part of our inventory and list it online for our event florist.
Yep.
Because that's another big part of our business. So they're going to be able to choose what they want. Then we're going to go down and go back to our retail customers with what's left and list that online for people who didn't prepay for product but are wanting to order flowers for that week.
Yep.
And so that kind of moves that product along. And then our store, which gets the most beautiful flowers, doesn't have the biggest selection of what we're growing. They get what we just have extra of that yep looks amazing and stuff like that.
I totally understand that, like, me saying whatever is left over is what you get kind of sounds nasty and not the most favorable. But, I mean, if you were to break down what you just said as far as the days of the week, you know, all of those shipping bouquets, regardless of whether they're subscription or, you know, what would you consider like a grab and go? What do you call it when you just sell like mixed boxes on your website? What is that called? Mixed bouquet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Our farm fresh flower bouquet.
Gorgeous. Love it. Love a sale. All of those things need to go out, you know, in the middle of the week.
There's a deadline.
There's a deadline for sure. So based on that deadline and taking that deadline into consideration, that's going to influence the allocation of who is getting what. Mm-hmm. For sure. The other thing, too, is since we're kind of talking about different avenues, you do want to think about or at least keep in mind the value or, like, what you're making off of that product, too. A lot of times you can get a higher dollar on each stem from the people who don't always have the most choice. So, like, selling to a wholesaler, you're going to get a lower cut, but you're going to move larger volume. Selling to a florist, you're going to get a little bit of a larger cut than the wholesaler because you're cutting out that middleman there. And then you're just going to continue to move up on that, dare we call it a pay scale, because you're basically working for yourself. As you're dealing with more people, as you're providing more opportunities, as you're, you know, providing that level of service to that customer that you're selling to. So you might not move 1,000 stems to one single farmer's market customer, but you are going to move, you're going to move product at a larger value rather than if you were selling to a wholesaler who would buy 1,000 stems, but you're going to get a smaller cut per stem.
But I just want to point out that our, not scales, our priorities on our customers, oh, what's the right word? I don't know what I'm trying to say, but we're basically opposite.
Yeah.
So I'm making the most money, but giving the most selection to our retail customers up front. And you're getting the least price per stem, but giving the biggest selection to your wholesaler customer.
Right.
And they both work.
For sure.
Both models work.
Absolutely.
It's just priorities.
Priorities, the way that you've built your business, how you've modeled things, what your goals and intentions were going into it when you were building your business, where you come to the industry from, you know, all of those things play a role.
Do you ever have products that you just don't offer people at all? Like they don't know it exists.
Absolutely.
So we do that for our wholesalers. So I'm just like, okay, let me take care of my highest paying customers first, and then I'll give you the rest. And if I know, if I have like an abundance of crops come on, that's what I'm offering to my wholesalers. Mm-hmm. So that's in my thinking, like, oh, what am I going to offer them this week? You know, it's like, oh, I have too many sunflowers that are about to bloom.
Yep.
I have status, which, like, I have rows and rows of status. Let me try to push that. Usually doesn't work for the wholesaler, but stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, other things that we want to talk about? Anything?
I think that's good.
Did we check all of our boxes?
I think we checked it all.
Okay.
Yeah, there's so many different outlets. There's no right formula for any one farm. And don't be afraid to change your formula.
Change, like, yeah, for sure.
I keep my relationships for us with our wholesalers. I keep that relationship and keep them engaged with our farm. I talk to them each season. We go back and forth and see if we can, if it's going to be a big sales outlet for us or not.
Yeah.
And it just depends each season. So for us, if we're looking to grow more of a crop for next year, then I'm definitely going to reach out and have that conversation with whoever our sales outlets are going to be. Because the flowers, it's too late to sell them when they're blooming.
Right.
They have to be sold.
Yeah.
You have to know where they're going to go.
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing, too, is the four, you know, avenues of sale or types of people that we talked about in this episode are not the only four types of people that can buy your product. You know, you could sell to a grocery store. You could sell to a distribution center who then is going to move your product elsewhere. You know, there are so many different options and types of people and types of businesses that you can find your little corner of the market in.
So it's true. Neither one of us sell to a grocery store.
On my list, though.
Is it?
Yeah.
For future growth?
Yep.
Okay.
On my list.
Isn't that a lot of work?
I could see us making it happen.
Okay.
I think
where do they fall? Where do grocery stores fall, like, in between price per stem? They're above the wholesaler? You're going to get more money?
Right around a wholesaler.
Okay.
Yep. Smaller bunch counts quantity, though.
I know a lot of farmers in our area. We have, and I'm going to take you there tomorrow.
Where
are we going? Somewhere we're going to go. It's our local grocery that sources all their stuff locally, and they've built up an amazing store. And so they have a huge following in the city. It's like where you go if you aren't able to go to the farmer's market on Saturday.
Okay.
Everyone goes there to get local produce and local flowers.
Cool.
And they reached out to me to ask to buy my flowers. And it was a decision that I made because I did not want to step on anyone's toes, but they were already buying from four other flower farms.
Four?
And I just thought that could get a little messy.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we could have supplied them with flowers. Also, they were kind of lower on the price point than where our farm is targeted.
Yeah.
For our price point. It was just something we decided not to do.
Yeah.
But also that was part of the reason. So
interesting.
We wanted to stay in our lane and still be friends with our farmer friends and let them figure it out. But I'm going to take you there. It would have been a great avenue for my flowers, but
cool. All right, Daniel, thank you for everything.
Thanks for having me on here.
Thanks for being a friend.
I hope everyone enjoyed our conversations, just hanging out here in South Carolina, and I love it every time you come, so come back.
Aw, so nice. All right. Well, kids, that's all she wrote for this week. Wherever this episode ends up falling in the schedule is where she's going to land, so I don't know what to tell you for next week. But if you have any ideas or people that you would like to hear on the podcast, let me know. All of my contact information is in the bio or the description of this video, or not video, episode, and we'll go from there. So everybody say thanks, Daniel. Thanks, Daniel. Bye.
Yay, bye.
See ya, bye.